Welcome to Direct Talk Radio, conversations with directors and artists in the performing arts. I'm your host, Joseph Miller. There's a lot of forward leaning in chamber music today, and Santa Barbara has fortunately hosted violinist Jennifer Coe, the Calder Quartet, the Silk Road Ensemble, Christopher Roundtree's Wild Up, Y Music Ensemble, the Danish String Quartet, and monthly concerts by the inimitable and protean Camerata Pacifica, to name a few intrepid explorers of the new. Today's conservatory-trained musicians often have a footing in rock and jazz, and the currents of world music continue to inundate all genres. In short, there are super exciting and rigorous collaborations happening between imaginative, highly trained, and diverse musicians throughout the global village. Among the forward leaners, Brooklyn Rider seems to be sprinting at a full tilt. Formed by four men who bonded together playing in Yo-Yo Ma's Silk Road Ensemble, Johnny Gandelsman and Colin Jacobson, the violinists, violist Nicholas Cords, and cellist Eric Jacobson, the New York-based string quartet has distinguished itself by years of fresh and fertile collaborations. Now, for their 10th anniversary, the quartet is touring their most daring project to date, the Brooklyn Rider Almanac. Short, new works by 13 diverse musicians, including jazz pianists Ethan Iverson and Vijay Iyer, saxophonist Daniel Cords, and rock drummers Greg Saunier and Glenn Cauchy, vocalists Aoife O'Donovan and Christina Corton, multi-instrumentalist Dana Lynn, and many more. I spoke with Brooklyn Rider, violinist and composer Colin Jacobson by phone last week, and he brought me up to speed on the concept of the new album and detailed a few of the composers, their compositions, and their inspirations. We spoke about the challenge of the new and the pull of the old, the balancing of tradition and revolution, the poetry of painter Vasily Kandinsky, who is a special inspiration for Colin, and the basis for his dance music collaboration Chalk and Soot, and the challenges of moving new works from the studio to the stage.
Well, this is exciting. You're coming to UCSB on January 22nd.
That's right.
And well, actually, they're bringing you, but you're actually going to be playing at Hahn Hall at the Music Academy. Have you played at the Music Academy of the West before?
Yes, one time during the Music Academy of the West. It was not this summer, but maybe the year before.
Okay.
I think that was it.
Okay,
yeah.
I was there. I was at that concert. That's right. And this okay. tour is kind of ensouled by the new album, right?
Yeah, I mean, so much of our energy over the last year or two has been devoted to the Brooklyn Rider Almanac and very much celebrating 10 years of being a group and kind of, a big project that we worked on. And so we're very excited now that this music has been recorded, that it's living live in front of people.
Right. And so... I understand that one of the pieces on the album, UCSB Arts and Lectures, collaborated with or partially funded.
Yeah, it's their commissioning partner, and Glenn Cauchy's piece, Ping Pong Fumble Faw, will have its world premiere while we're there.
Well, wonderful.
And Glenn is, of course, a great musician, a wonderful drummer of the band Wilco, but he's a great composer, has a whole life writing music for people now outside of the band. And with the Brooklyn Rider Almanac, we were really asking people, many of whom are outside of what we think of as the traditional classical music world, to write pieces, short pieces for string quartet, in which they name an artistic inspiration of their choice. And so people like Glenn and Greg Saunier, another drummer from the band Deerhoof, as well as people from the jazz world like Bill Frisell and V.J. Iyer and Ethan Iverson from the Bad Plus, all have written really interesting pieces for string quartet. So Glenn's piece is inspired by the German electronic music producer Jens Mossel, and his piece is just so rhythmically beautiful that the way it unfolds. I also love playing ping pong, so I have a personal connection to the piece.
Is Glenn a ping pong player?
Actually, I'm not sure. I haven't asked him that. Next time we're together, I will.
I have to say the new album is ravishingly beautiful. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
I've had a chance to give not a real careful listen yet, but have played some of them pieces through, and it's beautiful. The ping pong fumble thaw, as one might expect, like the first whole half is pizzicato, right?
It is, and it's pizzicato sort of being passed back and forth between the various instruments, forming a sort of really interesting rhythmic composite.
Right, right. And for our listeners, pizzicato is where instead of you're using the bow, you're plucking the strings. So it's a more percussive approach. Right.
So I almost think of us sounding, I don't know if he had this intention, but I've definitely seen him in his own work playing the thumb piano. You know, from originally from Africa, where you play it all with your thumbs. It sounds to me like when we're all doing that pizzicato the way he has us playing, it sounds to me like a thumb piano.
Right. Yeah. You know, speaking of sounding like different instruments, the piece Maintenance Music sounds hauntingly like a glass harmonica.
Mm-hmm. And that, yeah, so part of our mission with the Brooklyn Rider Almanac was to give voices to people, you know, who we think of as really creative musicians, but and are in our circle in Brooklyn, but may not be as widely known as people like Glenn or Bill Frisell. And Dana Lynn, the composer of that piece you just mentioned, Maintenance Music, is one of those. She was a classical violinist at Oberlin, but at some point there caught the Irish traditional music bug and moved to Ireland and lived and breathed that music for 10 years, so that she is really a great Irish fiddler.
Wow.
But she also always has played piano, other instruments, is a composer of really a lot of different kinds of music. And she, with that piece, Maintenance Music, her point of inspiration was the work of Mirle Lederman Ukeles, who I hadn't heard of before Dana brought her to our attention, but she's an artist living in New York and has basically been an artist in residence with the New York City Department of Sanitation for many years.
That's incredible.
And personally gotten to know most of the New York City Sanitation Department workers as part of her, you know, sense of, I think her work has a lot of ecological concerns and almost beyond ecology, the idea of maintenance, of the daily tasks that one has to do as a human being and how those themselves, in a certain sense, are works of art.
It's so beautiful. That story is so moving.
Yeah, I was so, that's been such a great journey for us to throw out this challenge to composers, you know, write a piece for string quartet. Maybe some of them haven't ever even written a string quartet before, but they were all creative musical voices that we sort of had musical crushes on from afar for years and thought they would have an interesting take on a string quartet. But then to hear what their sources of inspiration were and to not know some of those people like Mirle Lederman Ukeles has been great.
So your the name Brooklyn Rider comes from a group of an artist collective during the pre-World War I times that sort of gathered around the painter Kandinsky, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems
That
this album is almost destiny for you. I mean, because there was a book put out by them called The Blue Almanac that itself was cross-genre.
Yeah. That's right. And that was, thinking about our 10th anniversary as a group, we wanted to sort of encapsulate some of our interests and where we come from and the Blue Rider Group, which was centered around Kandinsky, but included people like Franz Marc and Arnold Schoenberg, the composer. They put out an almanac, which was really eclectic. I mean, it was a loose associative of artists. But what we loved about that was how eclectic their sources of inspiration were, from sort of Russian folk art and woodblock prints and so-called primitive art at the time, and they just had so many different kinds of articles and writings about music in that almanac. So we thought we could create some sort of almanac for our time as well, but mainly focused on music, since that's what we do.
Right.
Back a few decades ago, there was something called record stores, and you had to...
Oh, yeah.
You had to, when you went... If you were an artist, you had to market yourself under a particular category because people had to know what slot, what bin to find you in. It
right.
seems as though you guys have come along at the right time, where because of mass media and electronic music, and all those barriers have been breaking down.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's out in the world, there's more segmentation, there's more on the internet, sort of micro worlds, I think, forming of people who are totally devoted to one thing and they will go to the ends of the earth on the internet or wherever to find it. And then simultaneously, I think because of that sort of fragmentation of the world, I think artists and musicians have a desire to, synthesize and bring disparate things together, because we also are exposed to them all the time. So, and that sense of because there aren't record stores, that I think that has allowed for certain artistic freedoms that might have been harder a number of years ago. But everything's a trade-off. I don't think in artistic terms you could say there's a clear progress of things getting better or even worse. They're just different responses to different times, and we feel like the Brooklyn Rider Almanac is one response to our time.
But it seems to me it's almost an unqualified good that we have contemporary classical music, and that there's this reaching out to to world music, that there is such a dialogue going on, an intercourse between these musics from all different parts of the world. I don't know, that just seems to me so exciting and so obviously beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that the idea of putting up fences around different kinds of music was a little bit of an artificial construct, or territorial almost, like saying, if I play this kind of music and I love it, I can't engage in another kind of music. And I think it's refreshing that has gone away, it seems. And I think that it's a time of synthesis, and that is good. I think in all of this, we're looking, like this project, even though we're looking to people outside of what we think of the classical world, we love the rigor of their music making in what they do. And so I think it's not about fusing things that really don't belong together, but finding meaningful connections between different things.
You're tuned to KCSB FM Santa Barbara. The program is Direct Talk Radio, a spoken word special feature of The Classical Now. I'm your host, Joseph Miller. This week, I'm speaking with Colin Jacobson, violinist and composer with the progressive string quartet Brooklyn Rider, which will be performing as part of UCSB Arts and Lectures Up Close and Musical Series on Thursday, January 22nd, at the Music Academy of the West's Hahn Hall.
It's interesting what you mentioned about, you know, in with the internet, we can become a victim of our own selective perceptions. It can be an instrument for actually reinforcing a person's narrowness, just as it can be,
yeah,
if somebody wants to, a chance to break down barriers and expand their horizons.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, I think when it first started happening and everyone would talk about how everyone listened to all kinds of music on their iPad and whatever, I think that was true to some degree, but I think it is, like most technology, is a double-edged sword, and it can either enhance one's openness to the world, or you could go down a wormhole that is actually pretty narrow. So something to be aware of.
You have that Kandinsky quote. I think it's on the new album. Yeah, I think it's in the notes about your piece, about removing the old narrow conceptions, breaking down walls between the arts. And he says the problem of art is not a problem of form, but a problem of spiritual content. And I mm-hmm. thought that was a great quote.
Yeah, and I love the writings of Kandinsky around that time when he was going towards abstraction in a different way than Picasso, and trying to figure out some scientific way about it, but also feeling like, in some ways, not abandoning the romantic tradition of an artist needs to create from within, and that imperative is the most important thing in a certain way. So, and that has a spirituality to it, even if it's not assigned to a particular religion, but the artistic vocation as a spiritual vocation.
Right, as based on inspiration and insight, as opposed to merely imitation of forms on the outside.
Exactly.
In this notion of breaking down, you know, do barriers break down automatically as the new emerges, or do artists sometimes need to take up the sledgehammer?
Oh, well, I think that very much depends on the time and artists responding to a perceived need that they have, either internally or responding to an external force. So I think it does seem like there are times when there's rapid change and a Beethoven or a Schoenberg and Kandinsky come along and seem to sweep a lot aside in their search for new forms of expression. But that's what's always interesting, is everyone who is a radical force in changing art, you look at their work closely and you see how indebted they are to many things from the past. And actually, often that involves looking to a more distant past than a near past. Looking at things that happened, you know, in the Middle Ages was one way Kandinsky, I think, found his way forward with new forms and ways of expression. Beethoven was towards the end of his life in his late quartets, looking back towards Renaissance music. So even people we consider radical often are looking backwards in order to move forwards.
Hmm. Hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of the word radical actually is related to root. It's not merely something random or destructive that comes, but it's even the word suggests going back to something that already exists in a deeper way.
Right, a rootedness there.
Yeah.
That's interesting, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, that's where we get radish from.
Okay.
The root vegetable, yeah, it's interesting. Tell me a little bit about going back to Kahan Kallur and your connection with him and what that was about.
Well, Brooklyn Rider, the members of Brooklyn Rider, we all play in the Silk Road Ensemble as well, and we met Kahan there. And at some point, we felt like we had met a long-lost string brother, as he plays the Comanche, the Persian fiddle. And Kahan wrote several pieces for Silk Road Ensemble, and obviously within the Silk Road Ensemble, many traditions are represented, but we wanted to go specifically further with our Western string instruments and Comanche. And so we did create an album and toured that for a number of years. In fact, this year, we're going to be at the Savannah Music Festival with Kahan one day, the next day with Bela Fleck, and then another Brooklyn Rider Almanac concert. So that's very exciting.
Wow.
And there's a very good chance that Brooklyn Rider and Kahan will be going back to Iran and performing a series of concerts there, which I am so excited about. I think Kahan hasn't been back there in 6 years. So we're hoping that will happen, but it's unconfirmed as of now.
Wow. That's it. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Speaking of other collaborations and things coming up, can you say something about what about Veils and Vespers, John Adams' piece?
Yeah, well, actually, I think that, well, John Luther Adams.
John Luther Adams.
Yeah,
is different than John Adams.
There are two John Adams, and then there's the president, too, so it's all very confusing. But John Luther Adams is writing Brooklyn Rider, a piece that will premiere at UNC Chapel Hill, Carolina Performing Arts, this spring, and super excited about that. You know, John, I think, has one of the more unique composing voices out there that is so based in nature and natural processes, not maybe unlike Mir Lederman Ukele, who I mentioned earlier. But actually, the Veils and Vespers, I think the concept for that piece has changed, and that's no longer the piece he's writing for us.
Okay.
So I'm actually not currently sure what his concept is going to be, but I'm sure it will be conceptual because most of his pieces have a conceptual basis that is kind of pre-composition. But I know that he's able to capture the natural world in music better than most people.
You have written a piece where you're collaborating with the choreographer, John Hickenbotham.
That's right.
And is this for a whole, it's a whole dance performance?
Yeah, an evening-length work that we premiered at Jacob's Pillow this summer.
Okay.
And we premiered a portion of the work at UNC Chapel Hill a number of years ago, and then decided to make it an evening-length work that we premiered at the Jacob's Pillow Dance Festival this past summer, and then did as part of the White Light Festival in New York. And it is one of the songs from that evening length piece is part of the Brooklyn Rider Almanac album. And talk about sources of inspiration. It's Kandinsky's text, which he wrote for a book called Sounds. I mean, many people think of him as a painter, but he actually did put this book of strange poetry, sort of pre-Dada poetry, and woodcut etchings in an illustrated book. And they're wonderfully funny, quirky, strange, sometimes sad, theatrical poems that I thought would be a good point of departure to work with a choreographer on, because they sort of had a visual look and sense of theatricality about them already. And another source of inspiration for that piece for me was David, whose book I was reading at the time that I was writing that piece, called How Music Works. And, you know, he's just such an intelligent musician and has so many interesting thoughts about the creative process that you can read about in that book. So that was that helped me write the piece, basically. And then finally, the singer that I wrote it for, Shara Warden, who's an amazing singer that I just love, and her voice and thinking that I was writing it for her was another big help. And she goes by My Brightest Diamond, which is her own band, and has a number of wonderful albums out under that moniker. So it was really fun process to go through.
I love Shara Warden. Another singer that I kind of, for some reason, I sort of categorize them in the same progressive, refreshing genre is Christina Corden, who's also written for your for this new album too.
Exactly. Yeah, and she's a violinist in the Knights, the other group that my brother and I play in and founded a number of years ago. And she's a multi-talented person, violinist and singer-songwriter. And her piece is inspired by Igor Stravinsky and maybe some of his, you know, neoclassical leanings, and is a really I love to think that she captured some of the quirky simplicity that Stravinsky sometimes indulged in.
You're tuned to KCSB FM Santa Barbara. The program is Direct Talk Radio, a spoken word special feature of The Classical Now. I'm your host, Joseph Miller. This week, I'm speaking with Colin Jacobson, violinist and composer with the progressive string quartet, Brooklyn Rider.
Now, going back to Chalk and Soot for a moment, did Kudinsky write in English, or what language did he write in?
He wrote in, well, the original that I have, the manuscript that I think has been shown in museums and stuff is in German.
Okay.
But I'm actually not sure whether he wrote them in German or originally in Russian. So they are in English translation.
In English translation.
That I used as the text. Okay. And it seemed like because, I don't know, I really enjoyed the poems in English too. None of them are particularly, they're not like Goethe or something where there's something so deep about, you know, their connection with the German language and
mm-hmm.
stuff. I think they're meant to be fun and playful, and that's what I like about them.
Neat. Yeah, he's using words sort of divorced from their semantics, is that right? I mean, like sort of ignoring the direct referent meanings and using
exactly.
them for the sound.
So he was, I think he was part of this move towards abstraction. And even though he was not necessarily a poet, I think he saw the possibility of doing with words what he was doing with painting. My understanding is that the Zurich Dada people who followed a few years later very much were influenced by that book.
Hmm. You perform and you record almost exclusively new music, but then on the Seven Steps album you take on this monument of the canon, Beethoven 131. And I wonder if you could say something about that recording and how did you approach the idea? Yeah.
Well, actually, I will say that we do, of course, play a lot of new music and record it, but actually up until the Brooklyn Rider Almanac, much of how we thought about albums was sort of a pillar of the quartet canon alongside a lot of new music and trying to find meaningful connections between those things. So the album you mentioned, Seven Steps, Beethoven Opus 131 was that pillar. Not Brooklyn Rider Almanac, but the previous album was A Walking Fire, in which we recorded Bartok's second quartet. And prior to that, Dominant Curve had Debussy's quartet on it.
Okay.
And everything else on all those albums was new music. And what was fun about the Opus 131 Beethoven project was, as we were working on that piece, I think there's a sense sometimes that, if you're going to play a late Beethoven quartet, there's almost a stifling sense of the tradition that both playing tradition associated with a piece like that and an expectation that it's like a Mount Everest you have to climb, which, having done it, I will say does feel a bit like that. But we wanted to humanize that experience for ourselves and to engage in a creative process simultaneously to working on the interpretive process. So Seven Steps is the name of the piece that Brooklyn Rider co-wrote, almost kind of like a quilt. We each came in with sketches and then played with those, did improvising games, and came up with material that does change night to night, but we then stitched together into a piece. And yeah. We're not trying to put that on a platform as a monument of Western civilization by any means, like Beethoven's Quartet, but it was a freeing process for us to internally at the time, and we thought it was enough of something to put on an album.
It does feel like a new look at the piece, and even the fact that it's in that church in New Jersey where the reverb goes on, you know, it's not in a sound studio where they're controlling the reverb, and it really has a fresh feeling, and I can hear what you're saying, because anytime you take on one of these, there's sort of an invisible baggage that comes in with it of expectations and recording history and all of that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so yet none of that's intrinsic
to
the piece.
Own way.
Right. None of that's intrinsic to the piece.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Can you say something about your collaboration with banjo player Bela Flack?
Well, Bela came to us a couple of years ago saying he wanted to write a piece for us for banjo and quartet. And his original impetus to doing that was that he had written a banjo concerto for the Nashville Symphony and recorded that and wanted to fill out the album with another piece. And he had always wanted to write a banjo and quartet piece, he said, ever since I think the 80s, he and Edgar Meyer co-wrote a quartet. And ever since then, Bela said he wanted to try that again and do it himself. So, luckily, I think people like Edgar maybe pointed him in the direction of Brooklyn Rider. And I think we immediately thought this would be a great partnership because he has been experimenting with what the banjo can do for years. It's such a virtuoso and a risk taker. So it felt like a kindred spirit. And he wrote a really challenging piece full of virtuosity and difficult rhythms. There's a whole section in the piece that has this Indian reduction rhythm that I think must come from his experience playing with Zakir Hussain over the years. But we've toured that, and Bela has played on some of the tunes that I've written for Brooklyn Rider, and he also arranged some of his Flecktones material for the combo of banjo and string quartet, and we've had very good response from audiences, and Bela is such a great model musician to tour with because he's so even keel in a certain sense on the road. The experience he's had on the road for years is nice for younger musicians like us to see how he deals with it all, and yet he's also constantly pushing and trying to come up with new stuff on his banjo. So it's a great inspiration.
There's a documentary film about him and Edgar Meyer touring, and and they're working on their composing and working on a piece that they want to, by the last concert, they want to be able to perform.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot the name of it, but it's really an interesting movie in that regard. And they get a little bit at each other as the deadline approaches. But they pull it off. But the night before, they tried to play it and it fell apart.
Right. Well, I also love that about Bela. There's such a shred fest when he plays. He can play faster than just about anyone. But he also has this very human sense where he sort of sets up a situation with the audience and everyone around where it's okay to fail. Like and by doing that, then you can take more risks, which I love.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. We saw him last year. He was touring with his wife, whose name escapes me right now. I want to say Abigail something or other.
Abigail Washburn, yeah.
Washburn. And
yeah.
Have you seen them together perform?
Oh, yeah.
They're so great. They have
seen
such great
show in person. I have their album, which is great. But
yeah, they have such great stage presence because she is so effervescent and he is so dry, and it's really
totally.
It's so fun. And she plays clawhammer and he plays bluegrass, and so there's just this interesting. And then and she sings in Chinese, and they do jokes about parenthood, and she she, you know, it's just really funny. And it,
yeah,
it works so well.
You're tuned to KCSB FM Santa Barbara. The program is Direct Talk Radio, a spoken word special feature of The Classical Now. I'm your host, Joseph Miller. This week, I'm speaking with Colin Jacobson, violinist and composer with the progressive string quartet, Brooklyn Rider, which will be performing as part of UCSB Arts and Lectures Up Close and Musical Series on Thursday, January 22nd, at the Music Academy of the West's Hahn Hall.
Is it a different process getting these things down in the studio versus being able to play them on stage?
Absolutely. I mean, actually more with the Almanac album than other things, but certainly, I mean, I feel like, I mean, Brooklyn Rider, we love playing in front of people. It definitely adds in another layer. But because Glenn's piece and VJ Iyer's piece on the Almanac are rhythmically complex, I think the process of recording them was different than recording Beethoven, for instance, you know. So I think, you know, we were able to work on section by section in the studio and really get it up to the tempo we wanted. But then to have the sense of the whole in front of people is going to be different, you know.
Right. So, are you playing VJ's piece now?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think everything on that album is up for grabs, and I can't remember which cities were doing what, but I hope we're doing VJ's piece there because it's really a grooving, great, great piece. And his source of inspiration was James Brown for that piece.
Yeah, so right.
We are called upon to be human rhythm sections as well as playing difficult licks. So,
good.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, thanks, Colin, for taking time with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
We look forward to January 22nd.
Conversation.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Listening to Direct Talk Radio, conversations with directors and artists in the performing arts. For more information about this program, to listen to archives, or to communicate with me, Joseph Miller, visit www.therightjoe.com. That's thewritejoe.com. For more information on Brooklyn Rider's performance at Hahn Hall on January 22nd, please visit artsandlectures.sa.ucsb.edu or call 805-893-3535.